all of the other aspects already fit within the tools and techniques and systems that are already in place, whether they be the Viva systems, their email shops, their clinical trial teams. It already fits in those environments quite nicely. It's just a different way of experiencing the information, and video is ultimately very convenient and very consumable.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today's episode is how to use AI quickly to engage HCPs and patients. Now, many, if not all, pharma are introducing artificial intelligence into many of their activities. In this episode, we are going to be discussing some of the ways that pharma can get some quick wins in customer engagement by integrating AI into personalizing the interactions with the marketing content. My guest today is Mark Benthan, CEO of VHealth. Thanks for coming on the show, Mark.
Great. Thanks to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to found VHealth?
I've always been involved in the digital health side for the last 20 odd years, and I've followed through early stages of Zoom-like content, let's say, for field reps trying to become more digital. Mm-hmm. And essentially, one of the key elements has always been around trying to find new ways to engage customers, make sure they understand, as well as to personalize that relationship and make it easy to go further.
And so what sort of challenges are you seeing in pharma today?
Well, I think the challenges are almost the same as pharma of yesteryear. It's trying to keep up with the speed of progress, the needs of the physicians and the patients. There's continuing volume of products being approved and on the marketplace. And it's really difficult to get the message through to the people that need it, that most need it, at the right time.
Yeah. And I guess one of the things I remember from one of my podcast episodes from one guest, they were telling me that there's 2.5 billion new pieces of content every day out there. So, you know, it's like you're drowning in this sea of content. So that's, you know, ensuring that you get engagement from the physicians and patients is, with all this digital overload, is quite a challenge. Is that something that you address with VHealth?
Absolutely. If you look at what's been successful in other industries over the last 20 years, number one item that comes forth is convenience. Mm-hmm. The only reason for the technologies was because they made things easier, simpler, faster. And that's really the goal here, is to make sure that it's the right information from a trusted source, but delivered in a package and in a way that is really convenient to understand without having to wade through those 2.5 billion pieces of content all the time.
Every day, yeah. And so how does VHealth do that? Tell me a bit about what you're doing.
We got our start some time ago doing patient programs and omni-channel work for pharma across a number of sectors. And in the beginning of the pandemic, we started focusing entirely on video and what that could do. Mm-hmm. It was first live video, and then eventually became generative video. And we didn't even know what to call it 2 years ago when we were working on personalized video. The whole point was to deliver a simple message for an individual patient or physician that could be tuned to their particular need and even call them out by either name or using data that was available for them. So that's really what we have been working on. And we think that that does a good job of carrying a lot of the convenience forward for people.
For sure. And so I assume that with AI, it's generative AI that you're using for that?
Absolutely. Yes, we have our homegrown algorithms that have continued to evolve over time, and the last year has been tremendous. And people are, thanks to ChatGPT, they're now actually understanding what we're talking about, whereas perhaps 2 years ago, it was a little early.
Yes, yes. I've been doing this for 20 years, so I fully get the early problems. What data do you use to train your algorithms?
So we normally do, for whether it's for a physician or whether it's clinical, medical, field-oriented, or patient, we need to get about 1 hour of recording of full body and facial features, et cetera, and audio and voice and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then from there, it takes some time, actually. Still, it's a little bit like finding Bitcoin. It takes some time to train the AI to get the exceptional results. But once that is done, you know, 5 or so days later, you have an avatar that can be used for any number of different activities. As long as there's an approved script, then it can be used in different ways.
Nice. When pharma come to you, what are some of the specific things that they're actually looking for when they come?
Sometimes they're looking, they have a clear need for going global with content. They want to be able to be more efficient, deliver the key opinion leader message across many, many more markets and languages. Mm-hmm. Other times it's about being able to take advantage of the AI process for production to be able to simplify changes. Because as regulatory departments make requests for changes, it's hard to go back into studio all the time with traditional video production.
Yeah.
And they're starting to scratch the surface on what's possible with personalization, but that's still early days in terms of what pharma is looking for. But it's pretty exciting when it's enabled.
Yeah. Could you tell me a little bit about each of those different use cases? So if one of the listeners has, you know, got one of those challenges, they can think, oh, okay, this actually would work for it.
Yeah. Even if you take a good case or simple case to start with is KOL content going to physicians, target physicians in one or more markets. It's a great place to start. The key opinion leaders are generally exceptional on camera. So they've been already trained to be on camera a little bit. And so that 1 hour of recording can happen anywhere, whether it's at a congress that they might be already speaking at or in a remote location or in a studio, any of that's possible. So when the pharma comes, they already have an idea of who the KOL is, what they'd like to talk about. And they can get to an approved script, and also a KOL approved script is really important. Yeah. And then from there, it's the AI, and what we're doing is providing that execution support, and then beyond that, helping them deliver that messaging to any market across any language, and then make that material available to a much wider audience.
I really like that case study, actually, because that example of the KOL content, that's a really good one, actually, for this. Do you have any example of an actual case study? I mean, you can give it anonymously, of what people came and what they were doing before and how your system actually changed what they were doing?
So, and it applies, it's almost the same thing, but applies slightly differently to clinical, medical, field, and patient. But over the last, I guess, 6 to 9 months, it's been very good results in terms of the time that receiving physicians might be spending with the material.
Yeah.
Generally, they're seeing anywhere between 65 and 75% of any video that's being shown to them. And there's this real sweet spot in that minute and a half to 2 minute zone where physicians will really spend the time, and they'll also not only watch video. What we're seeing is that there's a huge increase when there is good video that's interesting, that's easily accessible. They'll actually click on many more of the traditional interactions that are also included in that messaging, whether it's in an email or in a web page and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing anywhere between 100 and 200% more clicks in materials that already exist. So it can really be used as kind of a tent pole within a campaign in order to make sure that the message goes through as well as the other material is also accessible.
And are you also seeing increase? So a lot of increasing in actually looking at it. Are you seeing a lot of increase in terms of the length of time that they're engaging with it as well?
Yes, we are also seeing on sort of a campaign basis from a journey that there's a willingness to come back. And if the material is necessarily longer, they'll spend more time. Our preference is to break it up into bite-sized chunks that can easily fit during the day. And then that way they can self-select to participate in those ways. And I think it's really just about whether it's patients or physicians, keeping the message simple and again, convenient. And there's always a chance to learn more, but we really have to make sure to take it sort of step by step as the recipient is going to experience it.
Yeah. And do you have any challenges that you come across when you're implementing this kind of approach?
I mean, there's always challenges. There's the initial upfront reaction of, oh, this is new. It's not been done in my organization. So what is it like and what's the corollary for it? But we found that the right approach is get to an approved script, an approved text. That's really the most important thing. The rest is will take care of itself as part of a production process or an avatar generation utilization process, but getting to that approved script is challenging enough in most environments. So as long as we get there, then the rest will take care of itself. And we've run programs where there've been combination of avatars and live in the same setting, where there's been conversations between avatars, and it's really quite credible what's being generated nowadays with what I would call sort of the V2 version of these avatars. They're much more sophisticated than what you see on the standard platform.
For sure. And so I guess the approval is one regulatory and legal challenge that you come across. Are there any other legal or regulatory challenges when you're doing this that you find companies mentioning?
Not particularly. I mean, we've been seeing that they've approving the script is most important. But after that, from there, all of the other aspects already fit within the tools and techniques and systems that are already in place, whether they be the Viva systems, their email shops, their clinical trial teams. It already fits in those environments quite nicely. It's just a different way of experiencing the information. And video is ultimately very convenient and very consumable. So we're not helping that 2.5 billion problem. We're in fact adding to it, but hopefully it's more relevant and easier to consume and learn from.
Yeah. And how many countries have you worked in? Is it mainly US or do you do other markets as well and other languages?
We support up to over 50 languages. I think it's up to 60 odd different languages. Nice. The most languages that any one of our avatars have spoken is, I think, 19 now. It's been used across Europe, United States, obviously. Japan has a really significant interest in receiving content in Japanese language, and they're not afraid of something that is labeled that it includes AI-generated content. That's fine for them. So Japan as well, Middle East is getting involved. So a number of different markets, and it's not all the big ones, which is good. And so it means that it's starting to penetrate from a capability, and people are going beyond those initial starter type of programs.
Do you find that your clients are a mix of global teams rolling it out across the world and local teams, or is there one that kind of comes to you more than the other?
It's a mix. The markets are different. The US market obviously can have teams that are focused on even multilingual needs inside the United States. So so we do see that as kind of being unique on its own. But there's a real combination between global teams getting started and then local teams going much, much further. So for example, with some of our clients, we've worked with key opinion leaders for more of a global remit. But then in specific markets like Germany, Spain, France, or what have you, the local teams are picking it up and actually bringing the field rep into that context sometimes, which is interesting. So you've got a good combination there.
That's really cool. And of course, the big question, how do you measure success? So is it the clicks? Is it, what are you seeing?
Well, so we measure overall engagement, obviously, which would mean everything to do with the open rate improvement, the click-through rates improvement across everything that's being done. That's what I mentioned to you previously, as well as time spent in the actual material and how much of it has been engaged with. We also measure in terms of survey questions and things like that during the material, so it is interactive. They can learn about that and tie it to individual physicians or customer experience material. And ultimately, obviously, in the United States, it's much more easy to then tie it to the script lift that would occur eventually. Yeah. Not necessarily off of any one message, but from an overall campaign, we see it being quite positive in that regard.
What kind of script lift are you seeing in the US? I mean, I know it's going to be different for different companies, but is there kind of like a range that you've seen?
Well, it's very exciting. In some cases, we're going out to an audience and engaging them that has not been engaged by the field team over the last year or so.
Yeah.
So this is an audience that is clearly interested in the content, but for whatever reason, there were blocks in place. And we're seeing a significant increase in not just their total participation, but the desire to then also re-engage with the field team. So that's exciting. And so far, we've been seeing a good script lift, but I think it's still early days until it compounds with a continued campaign. So step by step, we're getting there.
I really like that. Yeah. So the ones that have not been interact. So there's a lot of countries where, you know, there's remote doctors that they just can't get reps to them or not that often, you know, once every year or something. I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, places like Australia, you know, in the outback, and, you know, they tend to focus on the city doctors rather than the really remote ones that, you know, you can only get to with a little flying doctor service or something. But that would be really interesting because that would give them the opportunity to really engage all of these really remote doctors that they just don't get the chance to see in several markets, actually.
Yeah, and with the representative side, so we're doing the same thing with reps, not just with KOLs. Mm-hmm. And those reps, once they've got their avatar, they spend the same 1 hour, and that can be done. We've even done it in the rep's home office and just recorded them remotely and use that material. And what's nice after that is there's no need for the rep to do any work to generate the content. They can just trigger it and see the results and then continue on the conversation. So they can have a series of messages that they can use to reach out to their wider audience, let's say their remote audience, and rely on those being produced by the marketing colleagues and team.
Yeah.
But they're essentially part and parcel of that core environment. So they're still the face, the front face of the company, and they're still able to engage. And hopefully that leads to remote calls that are live and all of the benefits that can come with that one-on-one kind of conversation and relationship. So it can really be applied in different ways in different contexts.
So once the rep, for example, just as one of the many examples, records the thing. So say you had a huge target list of, I don't know, however many doctors. So I'm assuming that you can automate it. So that one video, that it looks like the rep is giving their individual names.
Absolutely. So that's a key piece of the personalization, which is pretty exciting.
It is.
So it's actually not just that they look like it, they are actually able to personalize it and hyper-personalize down to that individual, whether it be patient or physician. You mentioned rep, so it's on the physician side. And that carries right the way through from the preview that would engage the physician right up front, right the way through the actual video. And it's not just the name that can be used. It's any aspect that's important to the region or to the state, for example, or to formulary or whatnot. Any of that can be carried through that conversation so that the end result is the right information going to the right recipient. It's just going in a form which is easy to consume. and that's video. And we're really relying on that differential advantage of video to convey information a lot more easily. There's already a great retention in video versus the written word of about 6 times better. And that's proving to be a true. People do remember what they have seen, more importantly than what they have read. And so this carries through even more when it's hyper-personalized.
I was just thinking about a project we did quite a few years ago, which was it was a patient adherence program. So basically, the patient had to have an injectable drug, and so the nurse would go to the home for the first 6 months of them taking it. And there was a brand call center as well to talk to the patient, but they were still getting the usual thing you see with adherence, where even if you've got all this support, you know, they drop out the funnel. And so we were analyzing, predicting which patients, based on the ones that had already dropped out, which would drop out. And then there's so many different reasons. So we were then saying, okay, for this one, this is what the nurse needs to talk about. That actually would be a great use case for this too, because once you've identified with that patient what the problem that they're going to face, that they're likely to be thinking but not articulating to the nurse, you could actually send them these little very personalized videos from the nurses saying, you know, hey, John Smith, you know, I've been thinking about you, and I think this is something you should really be thinking about with the drug and blah, blah, blah. And you could actually address it in a really nice way with that. I like
that. Yeah, that's a great use case. We're in fact involved with one now in one market in Europe where they've identified a TV known doctor, which is great, because as patients will come, they're coming off of a QR code or reference from the pharmacist when they pick up the prescription.
Yeah,
and they're able to then interact with the lifelike avatar of this physician. And there's many of those patients that have identified or self-identified that they had questions. They have specific questions, but they haven't been able to get them answered. Why didn't they ask them? They might have been not enough time, embarrassed, not enough information. Perhaps it was all too much at that moment. Lots of different reasons. And so being able to give them the answer, as well as different answers to new patients or people that have maybe become lapsed, different groups, but you can go down the storyline in different ways to get the credible information. And it's the AI that is linking all those pieces together according to what's been regulatory approved and set up,
of course,
in order to convey that conversation. But it also points out what are the real needs that are out there, because we can see the pathways. We know what's really being asked and what's really being touched on, and also when people drop off and say that they've had enough.
Nice.
So this really is interesting.
Yeah, I can think of lots of cases where that would be amazingly powerful and save so much time with, you know, the human factor. So finally, do you have any advice for any pharma leaders just to ensure that they get the right expectations for implementing this kind of approach effectively?
I think the right place to start is to understand the current journey of whatever is the situation, whether it's physician, patient, et cetera, and where are the problem spots in that journey? And that should define the key items that we're trying to focus on to solve. If we can understand that journey quite quickly, we could say, well, this would be relevant or that would be relevant, and it's easier, better to go in this way. So as long as we understand that journey, and then we can make the various steps of implementation clear, then it gives, I think, a very rationalized approach to be able to incorporate this and not treat it as a panacea, but treat it as a complement to whatever else is already being done.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. Well, I really love what you're doing, and, you know, slightly ahead of the curve on using the generative AI for this kind of application in pharma, which is nice to see. For anyone listening who wants to find out more, you can reach out to Mark and his team at their website, which is vviihealth.com. So thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now. to make sure you never miss an episode.